Hello and welcome into Tuesday's edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up today, we'll be hearing from Weston McKennie, Robert Lewandowski. We'll also be joined by Ali Moreno, Hercules Gomez, Frank LeBeouf, and Shaka Hislop, Gab Marcotti, and Julien Laurent as well. But we start by taking a look at how football is looking to get back on track in Europe. Big news today coming out of Italy. The Serie A medical protocol has finally agreed that individual players will be quarantined with a positive test, while the rest of the group will continue to train with ramped up testing. More on that from Gab a little later on. Meanwhile, the Premier League clubs resume training in small groups on Tuesday. Troy Deeney, however, will not return to training this week out of concern for his baby son's health. And the Premier League have confirmed today that there are 6 positive coronavirus tests from 3 clubs. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Julien Laurent and Gab Marcotti. Jules, just to make that clear, it wasn't just 3 clubs that were tested, over 700 tests, but it was just 3 clubs that produced positive results. We've seen this. We knew that it was going to happen. How have people reacted?
Yeah, so 6 tested positive out of the 748 players and members of staff who were tested on Sunday and Monday. So we just had the results today, and the Premier League made that official, which is, I think, a very low number. You have to look at this. Although in Germany, for example, they only had 10 positive cases, but over 1,700, a bit more than 1,700 tested. So it's, if you look at it, it's still, I think, very positive, and it's, I think it comes to, with a big relief for the Premier League and for a lot of clubs, especially the ones who want to resume football, that number stays low, and 6 out of 750, more or less, is 0.01%. I think it's, for a first batch of tests, it's a good result.
Yeah, this is good news, isn't it, Gab, overall?
It is good news. It's not every club that has been tested. There's one club that hasn't submitted, or their results haven't been included in the total. A reminder that you'll be allowed no more than 40 people at the training ground, so you should end up with 800 tests. So, you know, those numbers, I think, will change a little bit, and there's some question as to why some clubs haven't taken up their full allocation. But, you know, the first hurdle has been passed. We know that the infection rate among Premier League players is extremely, extremely low, as Jules said, and that's an important first step.
Meanwhile, we saw Troy Deeney coming out and saying that he's not going to go to training, Jules. Obviously, we talk about players, if they're all going to think the same. They won't. Everyone's going to have individual opinions about coming back. What's the reaction to his quote been?
Well, I think, like you said in the intro, he explains it by the fact that he has a 5-month-old son who had breathing difficulty when he was born, which you could understand that his health is the priority in the Deeney household, and that they don't want to take any risk with anything. So you could expect their lockdown to have been very tight, for example, and very strict, and that Troy doesn't want to take any risk by going back training, even in small groups, and risking getting the virus and maybe transmitting it to his son and maybe the rest of the family as well. So you understand his position. And like we've been saying since the beginning, you will have to go case by case. Every player, like you said, will be different. Some don't have any children. Some have children that are older. Some have babies. Some have wives who are pregnant. Some have elderly people from the family living with them. All of that we have to be taken in consideration. So everybody will be different. But it's true that in his case, in Deeney's case, you can understand why, at least right now, he doesn't feel that it's safe enough for him to go back training.
Meanwhile, Gab, significant developments in Italy regarding the return of Serie A next month. We talked about this, haven't we? The fact that initially, if there was a positive test within the team, they would all be quarantined. Now they seem to be following the template of Germany. It would just be that player that has to self-isolate. And that was agreed today.
That was agreed in principle today, because of course this is Italy, so nothing is simple and straightforward. The player who tests positive will self-isolate. The teammates will be isolated amongst themselves, but they will still be able to train, and if and they will be, the testing will be ramped up, and if they continue to test negative, then they'll be able to play. And I mean, I think that was really, as we said many times, a non-negotiable step, because if you're going to impose a total quarantine, there was simply no way that you could finish the season. Another date for your calendar, Dan, May 28th is when hopefully there will be another mega meeting amongst all those involved, and they can finally green light the start, which, as you know, has originally been suggested June 12th. Then there was a government ban on sporting activity on June 14th, and they let us know that, well, yes, but we'll make an exception for Serie A if you get all your ducks in a row in terms of the medical protocol. So now it's up in the air, but we will have an idea. If it's not going to be June 12th, 13th, it should be the following week, provided things go positively on May 28th.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. An eclectic mix. I had a listen of the Gab and Jules podcast that dropped on Monday. Be sure to take a listen. Very entertaining stuff from the boys. You can do so by going to the website. Yanar Fjortov also on the pod as well, talking about Borussia Dortmund's impressive victory against Schalke. On the receiving end of that defeat, US international Weston McKennie, who spoke to Taylor Twellman about the whole experience.
What was it like? Just being back out there.
It was awkward. It felt like soccer, but it didn't feel like soccer at the same time. You know, no fans, not really an atmosphere. You kind of have to really depend on your self motivation and your self drive, you know, to really give your 100% in the game. Obviously we took a big L on this past weekend, the Riviera Derby. So, in that game, you could really tell that we been out of it for quite a long time. As of right now, we're just going with the flow and how everything is and trying to take it step by step and you know, trying.
How many days did you guys train together collectively as a team?
As a team, like full contact, everything like that, probably a week and a half.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most difficult part for me, Weston, is obviously having the expectation. Listen, you guys were rolling towards the end of the season. Then this pandemic comes. You take a 6.5-8 week break. Obviously, there's going to be some rust there. My thought, though, was as a player, after seeing the pandemic and seeing the scary parts behind you a little bit, were there any safety concerns going into the game for you?
As far as me personally and many of the players, like, I guess the only thing right now that's making it feel like a pandemic is all the precautions that we're having to take, like I said, for playing again. Like I said, everything's opening back up over here. You know, the nice weather is making it feel like a brighter day, brighter mood. But I mean, we're still stuck inside and having to take the precautions that we need to so that we can carry out the season. So I guess going into the game, it was awkward a bit. You know, we had to wear masks whenever we're, you know, if you're sitting on the bench, wear masks, go warm up at different times, go out for warm ups and no fans. You hear every voice and echo in the stadium. You hear a ball get kicked. You hear a ball drop to the ground. Like, you hear everything.
Frank LaBeouf and Shaka Hislop with me. Frank, I want to start with you. Interesting stuff from Weston McKennie talking about how it felt like a game, but it didn't feel like a match. How would you prepare for a game in that sort of environment mentally?
Well, as he said, you have to make sure you all know what is depend on, and make sure that your concentration is at the top, because you will have to work without the help of the fans and you know, in France we have an experience sometimes, you know, once a year where we go to play in Monaco, where Monaco sometimes you can play in front of like 2,000 people, which is almost nothing for football players. So we get used to it, and you know that's special, and you have to get used to it. And I play at the end of my career, I play in Qatar, which was like a pre-retirement situation, where you play in front of 20 people. And when you used to play in front of 50, 60,000 people, it's hard to get the top concentration and the stamina that you need. But it's part of our job. You have to win against another team. And it's what I didn't like about Schalke. I think they were nowhere near it. And even mentally, they weren't really prepared.
Yeah, you talk about the lack of time that they had to prepare. Obviously, Dortmund had the same amount of time, Shaka, and they were excellent throughout the game. Like, same question to you. Like, mentally, how would you prepare for this sort of situation?
And that's the thing. I'm not quite sure how I would appear because it's such a unique circumstance. Listen, we've all kind of come back for pre-season and in mainland Europe where you have the Christmas breaks and you know how to work your way back in to full match fitness. But ordinarily, there are games in there against lower league or semi-pro opposition. So you can feel your way back. You can get your match sharpness. You know where you're lacking and where you're feeling sharp. But in Schalke's defense, you come up against a Dortmund team who know exactly who they are and what they do. And they saw that again on the day at their counter-attacking best. I think a couple of the goals and even me who defends goalkeepers as best I can, I'll put down to a couple of goalkeeping errors. And that was the difference between Dortmund and Schalke. They knew who they were. They knew what they were doing. And Schalke came into the game questioning themselves, not knowing who they were or where their fitness levels were. And that was the difference between the two.
Is it easier for goalkeepers, though, coming back, Shaq? Because your match fitness isn't the poor and just jump around a bit. And obviously you haven't got people booing you and the same pressure isn't the same.
It's a whole lot harder, if you ask me. And never mind this, just jump around a little bit. You have to get your timing right. You know, whether it's taking crosses, whether, as I mentioned on the day, it's about shots and the quickness of it. Skipping off the top of a surface, whatever it may be. I always felt that I needed a full preseason, and even then, it would be maybe 3 or 4 weeks into the season before you start doing things naturally and seamlessly. And when you don't have that, it's telling because the little differences, the little errors, mistakes in timing, the result is catastrophic.
Everyone seems to have an opinion, Shakers, about how you can improve the experience for those watching at home, talking of piping in music. Obviously, we saw the substitutes all sat apart from each other. There's a lot of different things that we were new to. It was new to us as a viewer. For you, what would you implement or what did you find difficult as a watching experience?
Listen, the challenge is, I don't think there's anything that replicates a true match day. And especially, you know, we're talking about Dortmund, Schalke and the yellow wall. I mean, what kind of music do you pipe in that somehow replicates that atmosphere? What can you do? Credit to Germany in trying to get sport back on. At least we had live games and we can talk about that. But there is nothing artificial you can do to replicate the atmosphere of a real match day. And that's the catch-22 to this. We're not going to have the game as it was a few weeks ago until something comes of this pandemic, but we have to accept what is our new normal for the next few months, it seems.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree. You don't have the choice, and it's fantastic to go back on the field and play football. And don't forget when you are young, you know, you don't have the fans. Yeah, when you start playing football, you don't need the fans to be to play like every game and thinking it's a World Cup final. So for Alan, it was like maybe 6 or 7 years ago when he was playing in front of nobody. So you have to recall that and give your best. But of course, it's strange. Of course, it's special, especially because you know you're going to have contact. You never forget about the pandemics, and you know that there is a risk that you have to take. But at the end of the day, I think it's a positive weekend that we saw. Of course, the players are not fit yet. The entertainment wasn't at the best because they have to get back in their best. Because of the atmosphere, you had nothing. But it's nice to see football again. And I think the players who played are pleased that they went through that experience, because that's a hell of an experience.
Of course, continues this weekend. In fact, Friday is the first match in the Bundesliga, and it's a Berlin derby. Hertha taking on Union Berlin. And then on Saturday, Borussia Mönchengladbach taking on Bayer Leverkusen, and also Wolfsburg playing host to Borussia Dortmund. And then Sunday, Schalke Augsburg, Mainz against Leipzig, and Cologne take on Fortuna Düsseldorf.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
That penalty for Robert Lewandowski at the weekend made it 40 goals so far this season in all competitions. Now, he was asked about fellow strikers and who he rated the highest.
Karim Benzema, Timo Werner. I say about the typical striker, yeah? So, in this moment, Luis Suarez. And I have still two. So, Sergio Aguero. And the last one. Yeah, Leo Messi is not the typical striker. That's why I don't say that Messi or Ronaldo as well. Or, okay, I say no, because there's another position, I think so. So maybe the next striker, the typical, central striker is like, okay, Kylian Mbappe.
Frank's still with us as we welcome Ali Moreno to the show. It just sounded like Lewandowski put a lot of work into thinking about that top five and didn't just name the first five strikers really he thought of. But let's go with this anyway, shall we? Timo Werner in the top five, of course. No Erling Haaland. No Harry Kane for me. Ali was the big standout.
Yeah, so let's address Erling Haaland, and I think both Frank and I think the world of Erling Haaland as a player, and that his future is so very bright, and he may very well be at the top of this list in the next few years as his game grows and matures. However, I don't mind the fact that Lewandowski doesn't include him. As for Harry Kane, if you're talking about out-and-out strikers in the world with the productivity that he has had in the Premier League, with the productivity that he has had in terms of what his game has become and continues to be, outside of the injuries, Harry Kane is certainly in the top five out-and-out strikers in the world. And so when Lewandowski is thinking about out-and-out strikers, then he has to consider the fact that Kylian Mbappe is not really an out-and-out striker. He's not your typical number nine. Harry Kane is. Mbappe is a wonderful talent, but not quite a number nine just yet. And so I would have Harry Kane in, Mbappe out. However, I would also make the very clear note here that I would include Kylian Mbappe in any of my teams.
Frank Leboeuf?
Well, I'm pleased with what he said, but I will include, of course, himself. I think Lewandowski is maybe right now the best striker, and he should be in that list. But of course, I agree with Ali. Kylian Mbappe, even if he played like half of the season as a striker, is not ready yet. Can be named a striker. He needs to involve his game, and I think he's in a better position when he plays either on the left side or the right side. For me, Timo Werner needs to show me a little bit more and maybe see him in a bigger club to be in the first five. And it's why Harry Kane, with what he proved the recent seasons, should be in that list. And Alan can show his nose and maybe be in the fifth position instead of Kylian Mbappe.
Luis Suarez, is he top five striker still, Ali?
Barely hanging on. But he's there because even now, at this point in his career, you look at the movement of Luis Suarez off the ball. And I know that Frank has some sensitivity when it comes to Luis Suarez's behavior, but let's just talk about the soccer ability and his movement off the ball, the way he draws defenders in, the way he fakes for a run into the near post and ends up popping up at the back post. He just sets defenders in a way in which he still doesn't have to be the fastest guy on the field to get in behind because of his knowledge and understanding of the position, the usage of his body, how defenders just kind of roll off his back because he's able to angle his body in a way in which it allows him to turn. He still has all of those things. Now, of course, injuries are an issue. Age is an issue. Perhaps productivity is not what it has been in years past. But I still think that Luis Suarez at his best is very much one of the best out and out strikers in the world.
No question, in his prime, the best. Where is he now, though? If you had to choose, Ali, him or Aubameyang? So Suarez now.
I'm taking Luis Suarez still. I'm taking Luis Suarez still. I don't have an issue whatsoever in picking Luis Suarez. And Aubameyang, while you may consider him an out and out striker, he's very similar to me in terms of Kylian Mbappe, a guy who needs space to run, needs space out in wider areas. He sometimes throws himself into wider areas because that's where he thrives in finding that space in behind. I don't think of him as the sort of guy who moves off the ball in a center striker position the same way that a guy like Aguero does and a guy like Luis Suarez, even Harry Kane does. There's a certain innate ability to be able to find those little gaps and those little spaces the way that Lewandowski does as well. And in order to do that, you have to have that skill set and that recognition of where your movement has to be in order to confuse defenders and make sure the defenders are always searching for you rather than you making this into physical battles or trying to get in behind in some other difficult way down the sides. If you're going to stay central, you have to recognize those spaces, and nobody does that better than Luis Suarez in the world.
So, Frank, if we're going for your top three, we've got what? Are we going Lewandowski, Kane, Aguero? Is that where we are? Where are we?
On the top three, Lewandowski, Benzema, and Aguero. About Luis Suarez, just my thought about him. Of course, I'm not a big fan of him, and he's not in my heart in terms of behavior. But what a player! I mean, he showed for a decade the quality that he has as a striker, and he's a fantastic striker. And no comparison even with Aubameyang. I think we reached the top, the world class, and he is a fantastic striker. I don't forget about. Also about Cavani. Cavani, of course, is not in that list because he's not at his best and maybe for the last 2 years. But I have a thought about him because he has been during his long career a fantastic striker. I just have a thought about him.
But how can you have him as a... Yeah, you just said he hadn't done it for 2 years, Frank.
And I say Lewandowski is maybe the best. Yeah, so I put Lewandowski, if it's your question, because I'm not sure I heard it properly, but...
you answered it correctly, but then you bring up Edison Cavani for no reason because you said he hasn't been that good for 2 years.
No, I just want to make a tribute to Cavani for his career because we are talking about strikers and you cannot forget a fantastic player. He's still playing, so he's not done yet. And it's why I want to talk about him because, I mean, I love the player. I love his behavior. I love everything about him. Okay. He's just maybe too old and he's struggling at Paris Saint-Germain. That's it.
Come on, Dan. You know that Frank has a soft spot for Cavani. And if for nothing else, he will tell you that, hey, Cavani's good looking. He dresses well. He has a nice haircut and good parents. All these things that we heard before in the comparison between Cavani and Luis Suarez, it's all come from Frank. And you know that Frank loves Edinson Cavani.
It's the hair. That's what pushes her over the edge. Frank is just envious of those flowing locks.
That's it.
Top three, Ali, who have you got?
Top three, I would have Lewandowski, I would have Sergio Aguero, and I would have Luis Suarez.
Really, Ali?
No. No.
I'm sorry. Did I throw some names?
What about Karim Benzema?
Out of this world, or what?
What's wrong?
What did I say? Did I put Karim, myself
yes,
in the
of
list
course.
By accident? What did I do?
Well, you last time put in doubt, you know, the thing that think about football, even when I put Milner as a top ever player. But Karim Benzema, I mean, for a decade, how many goals he scored for Real Madrid? How many Champions League he won? I don't know. You cannot put Benzema out of the best three strikers, my dear Ali. Even if
I'm
it
sorry.
Was your
so,
position.
Okay, so who are you taking out? Who are you taking out, Frank?
Your big friend Luis Suarez.
Ah, there it is. There it is. We got him. We got him.
Oh, okay, yeah, you're good. You're good at it.
Unbiased of Frank LeBeau.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Just a reminder, Frank is with us on Extra Time today, joined by Shaka Hislop once again. You can check that out over on the YouTube channel. A lot of talk at the moment, isn't there, around MLS and this possible tournament down in Florida. Jeff Carlisle has written about it over on the website. Be sure to check that out. Well, Ali's still with us. We welcome Hercules Gomez to the show as well. Herc, how likely is it that we're going to have kind of this special tournament down in Orlando?
It's very much up in the air and very much premature, if you ask me. I mean, there are teams right now that are only training about three times a week. So you're asking players to go from not training at all to training by themselves three times a week to all of a sudden a competitive environment and have a full season, or I should say mini season, this tournament style. In Orlando, there are major concerns with player fitness, but also safety. I don't think any of the players want to go into an environment where they don't feel 100% safe. Testing will be an issue. I've been informed that the players will be tested twice a week, but those are only the players and the staff that is around the players when we talk about coaches, when we talk about equipment managers, et cetera, et cetera. But if you talk about the hotel staff and that staff, they're not going to be tested. They're going to be measures as far as taking their temperature and whatnot, but they will go to their families and come back and work in said hotel where the players are staying. The players will not be around their families. It's a major issue for some of these players who, quite frankly, have pregnant wives back in their local markets. They've got families, they've got kids, and they're going to be leaving their families for about 8, if not plus more weeks during a pandemic. There is a race for concern with a lot of Major League Soccer players.
Ali, how would you feel about it if you were still playing?
Torn. Completely and absolutely torn, because as a player and as a competitor, you want to be on the field. And if the way for MLS to get back out on the field is in a tournament, then so be it. That's what we need to do. That's my job. That's what I prepared my whole life to do. And so therefore, that's where I'm going to be. That's my responsibility as a player. But you cannot separate yourself as a player from the real world. And for a lot of these players, their real world includes a family, includes loved ones, includes people that need you. And you would be walking away from those loved ones in a time in which they need you the most. At their most vulnerable, you'll be walking away to pursue your responsibilities and your dreams of continuing to play soccer. And so that individual dream, that individual goal that you have set for yourself for years upon years upon years, and then it comes to fruition because this is what you do at the professional level, how important is it to you? Because are you willing to then just kind of walk away and turn your back on your responsibility as a father, as a husband, as a boyfriend, as a son, all the things that we value so much more than we should, in terms of comparing it to a game, and this is what soccer is a game. And so how do you reconcile those two things? Two completely different worlds that collide, and now you're supposed to make a decision, and an educated decision at that. It's a difficult, and impossible position to put the players in.
What's the alternative, Herc? How would you sort it out? How would you fix it?
All the players have to be on board. Could you imagine a scenario where the top players, the most high profile players, a player like Carlos Vela, for example, who's got a pregnant wife and has a toddler at home, is going to leave his wife during a pandemic. He says, you know what? I don't want to do it. I don't care if I don't play or if you don't pay me. I won't do it. So now you have the high profile players staying at home and the rest of the players are going to go play in this tournament because maybe Major League Soccer has certain commitments with certain season underway and certain other players want to get it. It's a no-win situation, really. I don't think it's quite frankly impossible to get 100% of the players on board with this. Ali said players are torn. I don't know what I would do, what I could recommend to finish this out. Certainly, it's at a comfort and case-by-case scenario for each player. But personally, I don't see how you can do it where 100% of the players are on board.
So what do we do? How do we finish the season, Herc?
Like that, case by case. If a player doesn't want to go, he shouldn't be forced to going. But there will be salary restrictions, and by that I mean if you don't go and you don't play, you don't get paid.
But what I'm trying to get to is, should there still be in your opinion, should there be a tournament, or should they wait? States we are seeing open, California and New York, of course, are talking about sports returning next month. Should they wait in that process? Like, what would you do if you were Don Garber right now?
If it's safe to do so, you do it. The Bundesliga has provided that layout or that blueprint, if you will. I was told the Players Union for Major League Soccer consulted an epidemiologist and assured them that it was 100% safe, the plan, everything, just as safe as you being in your local market. So if that's the case, I go forth and I try to fulfill those obligations, but I don't force anybody to do it.
Where do you do it? How do you do it?
Well, right now they're talking about Orlando. They're talking about Wide World of Sports. They're talking about all 26 teams in that market coming to and being in this biodome or in this bubble, if you will, to control as much as they can of that environment, leaving their families. And if a player gets infected or tests positive, quarantine said player. And here's the tricky part. If that player comes up positive, well, chances are his teammates might also as well. So now you have to quarantine a whole team. How does that work? There are many different factors and variables that we just don't know. But I think it's worth a try. Statistically, everything we've been told, I think it's in the best interest of the league to try to finish the season out.
Ali, how would you handle it if you were the commissioner?
Well, the first thing that I would have to sort out if I'm Don Garber is the financial stipulations and the agreement with the players union to say, okay, what are going to be the pay cuts that you're going to take? What are the salary cuts that you're going to take? And if I come to an agreement on that, then we can start talking about, okay, we have sorted out a plan to move forward, and whether that tournament is the best idea or not, we shall see. But until they figure out what the players and the players' union are willing to give in and are willing to kind of meet Major League Soccer in the middle and say, all right, this is how we work together and this is how we work forward holding hands together. If that agreement comes forward, then you, as a player, then you have to take a step back and you have to say, all right, what do I feel comfortable doing and what can I take from the Bundesliga, or can I take from the fact that we live in a different world now than we did 3 months ago? What am I willing to give up? And if that means a couple of months away from your family to be part of the team and to carry out your job, are you willing to take that step? Let's say that you say, yes, that's what I want to do. Look, the tournament is not perfect. It's not ideal. I'm not sure what it accomplishes. I'm not sure what the significance of this games will be and what it would perhaps, in terms of the outcome of this tournament, what is it going to do for the teams or the season? But what it does is that it gives you some sort of approach, some sort of getting us closer to normalcy, to putting the players and the teams out on the field sooner. And if that's the case, I think MLS benefits from it, and eventually the players benefit from it. Now, what players union, MLS teams, I think what they have to measure against each other is the benefit of playing this tournament, is this far superior than the negatives of leaving our families behind? Or in somehow kind of cheapening the competition and kind of think that this season has some sort of significance because of this tournament gets us going in the right direction. Those are the decisions that you have to make. But I would like to see MLS back out on the field. In whatever way, shape, or form, I think it's important for MLS to get back out on the field. And if that's playing this tournament, then I'm all for it.
Meanwhile, Herc, Liga MX look like they're going the other way. Sources suggesting that the season is about to be voided.
Yeah, it's looking like that. There aren't enough teams who are on board. I believe that during yesterday's meeting, they asked all the teams, and seven of those teams said they were in favor of continuing this current format or this current clausura season. There were a few that were against, and some that just wanted more, I guess, statistics, more opinion from health officials as far as what can happen, what can go on. Much like here in the United States or elsewhere, depending on your market, there are a certain number of infections or statistics that could support or go against your argument. So they're trying to take everything into account with certain health officials, but I don't see how it can. I mean, this season's supposed to be over in July, and now the next season is mid-July, late July. We're already approaching that. They still have, I believe, 7 weeks of play to go, plus playoffs. Without going into next season, I seriously don't see where. And this is less of Liga MX and more of a health concern with what is the Mexican or the country of Mexico and the amount of tests that they can have and they can support, providing player safety, etc., etc. What we do know is these teams are seeing it more as a viable option right now just to pull the plug and saying we've lost enough money, we've played these players and our staff enough for this season that we're not going to be able to finish out. Let's just cut our losses.
Finally, boys, Ali, if I got you on, we may as well talk about the birthday boy today. Not you, but a man who turns 27, which I imagine makes you feel pretty old.
Yes. If Justin Martinez is 27 years old, then oops, then we have some issues. Because the quick math will tell you, yes, I am getting old and significantly so. Happy birthday to Justin Martinez. Feliz cumpleaños, que la pasen muy bien. And here's a guy in Justin Martinez who, I have to tell you, it's not like he's jumping around in joy because there's a pandemic going on, but it's a player that certainly could benefit from the fact that the MLS has been delayed as much as it has. And assuming that there is a season to be played, there is a chance for Jose Martinez to play an important role for Atlanta United late in the season as he comes back from his ACL injury. I hope he's getting better. Feliz cumpleaños. Jose, te quiero mucho.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. More, by the way, from Herc and Ali, as they're joined by Sebi. Basically, it's them shouting at Seb. Check that out on the YouTube channel.
Mama Venezuela!
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned NAPA stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
8 years ago to the very day, and it still hurts Bayern Munich fans deep. Losing at home the Champions League final against Chelsea. Bayern dominating the game, Thomas Muller scoring, but then it was all about Didier Drogba, of course, getting that late equaliser to force it into extra time. Drogba then concedes a penalty. Arjen Robben sees it saved by Petr Cech. We go to penalty shootout and it's Didier Drogba who scores the winning goal to give Chelsea their first Champions League title. Let's go down memory lane then with Frank Leboeuf and Ali Moreno, shall we? Frank, where did you watch this game?
I was in Los Angeles and I was at the ESPN studio watching the game. And I was alone. It was a lonely win, but what a win. I mean, I was so tense. I never been tense in front of a TV screen all my life long. I mean, I never thought that Chelsea will make it. As you said, it wasn't maybe the best Chelsea ever, but it's the Chelsea who believed that they could do it, and they never gave up. And Didier Drogba, man of the match. And I was on my knees when he scored the penalty and he won. And, you know, I always remember that Lineker say, you know, always the German win at the end. Well, it doesn't work with some English clubs, Manchester United in 1999 and Chelsea in 2012. I mean, that was a hell of a win. And for the fans and for the club, it's been absolutely fantastic.
This is all about Didier Drogba, wasn't it, Ali?
Yes, it was. And if you're very honest and very, very clear as to what this Chelsea team was, it was very much about Didier Drogba. Because if you compare this to some of the other Chelsea teams that had made deep runs in the Champions League, this would have been the unlikeliest of those Chelsea teams that would win it. But Didier Drogba was, particularly in that final, but really in the run all the way up to the Champions League final, he was carrying this team, and his hold-up play and the strength, and he just kind of throwing defenders to the side and turning on people and creating chances for himself and for others. But just as big a hero as Didier Drogba was, as you just mentioned, Dan, it is Didier Drogba that takes down Frank Ribery for a penalty kick that you would think, okay, well, this is it. It was a great story. Drogba had a great tournament. He's been great in this final. But it's Drogba who's going to be the villain because he just took down Ribery for a penalty. Arjen Robben misses a penalty, Peter Cech makes a save, and then just kind of things change from there, and eventually in penalty kicks, Chelsea wins. It was an unlikely win for Chelsea. It really wasn't the best Chelsea team to ever make a deep run into this tournament. Roberto Di Matteo players just kind of in some ways rallied around him and said, okay, we're going to play for this guy. I want to pour our hearts and souls into this. We're going to compete. We're going to believe in what we're doing. And in the end, you saw the final result. What a win this was for Chelsea, and what a disappointment this was for Bayern Munich.
Ali makes a good point there, doesn't he, Frank? And you mentioned it before, this was far from the best Chelsea team, but they seem to rally around Di Matteo and obviously lift the trophy at the end.
Yeah, that's the good thing about that era and that story. It's that Roberto Di Matteo comes up during the season and they achieve a fantastic end of the season, and he's going to stay, well, like, less than a year at the club. But what a memory. And I think about Eddie Newton as well. He's his assistant coach, and we all played together when we won the first trophy in 97 in the FA Cup final with Roberto and Eddie. And it's why I was very involved in that, because we felt that we changed Chelsea a little bit. Then Chelsea became very, very famous around 2003 when they won the championship, but we needed a Champions League win, and they did it with not a big talent, maybe one big talent, as Ali mentioned, with Drogba, but with the team spirit, and they very much fought all together, and they did it in a very strange environment, because they play away from home for Champions League final. It's pretty rare.
Yeah, this is it. Well, Ali, wasn't it? Everything was just set up for Bayern, and they look back at that game, they must think, how on earth did we not win it?
Well, and think about that game in particular. You go ahead 1-0. You are in your own stadium. You're feeling good about yourself. And then there's a late equalizer by Didier Drogba. Even in the penalties, after Arjen Robben has missed and Peter Cech has made the save, and now you go to the penalty kick shootout, Juan Mata misses the first penalty for Chelsea. So you're thinking, okay, all right, well, Bayern is going to win it anyways. They're going to find a way. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't the perfect ending you were looking for. And then somehow it turns around again. So on multiple occasions, the momentum within that final changed, and it all seemed to change in favor of Chelsea. Now, just as a side note, did I just hear Frank make this win of Chelsea in the 2012 Champions League final about him, and that the root of this win was with him back in 97? Is this what I just heard from Frank Leboeuf?
Well, you want to hear what you want to hear. I just said that I was relating Eddie Newton and Roberto Di Matteo in our wins. It's why I was involved, because they were my teammates, and because we know that Chelsea before us didn't win anything for like 26 years. And in 97, when we won, we started to win again, talking about Chelsea. And the Graal was touched by the 2012 team with my teammates, former teammates, Roberto Di Matteo and Eddie Newton. End of the story.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Ian Dark will be with us. It'll be interesting to hear from Ian what it's like commentating a game from home. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Gab, to Jules, who else has been on, Ali as well, and Hercules Gomez. For more, stay tuned though, Shaka and Frank on Extra Time today. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Shaka here, Slob and Frank Leboeuf with me. Thank you as always for your tweets. Frank, you didn't think these tweets were real. You're asking us before who makes these up. I promise you, these are genuine tweets that we get from people who then get very angry that we ask these silly questions that they originally send in.
Why are you getting so upset? That was a question off first, you know, so something you shouldn't repeat to the people, because I don't know. Because sometimes I see some questions, you know, I can wonder if you have something against me, since I lost the quiz against Jules. So I'm asking just a simple question. Don't get upset. Take it easy.
Frank, there's a lot of things that you say off camera that I keep to myself. I promise you about that. But that I felt like sharing. That these are all genuine questions.
Thank you very much for that.
Are there any players, Frank? Listen now, you know, come on. Are there any players you've played with who were unstoppable and could do anything they wanted in training but just couldn't quite translate that skill and ability into a proper match.
Ooh.
I have the other way around with Mark Hughes. Was simply horrible during the training session, but absolutely fantastic during the game. I'm sorry, I don't have any example.
How horrible was he?
I think it was like we talked about him with Craig, like, I think a couple of weeks ago, a couple of shows ago, where we mentioned that the fact that the guy could miss a goal from a yard away, and horrible. He was missing controls. He was nowhere near it, and I don't know. Sometimes you say, okay, how the coach can say he's going to be fantastic, but he was fantastic, and he was one of the best players I ever played with. No doubt about it. But I don't have an example of a fantastic player. We have some players, you know, where feeling very technically easy during the training session, and with the stress of the game, they are less good, but they're still good. They're professional players.
Shaggy, you played with a lot worse players.
Yeah, I did. But to Frank's point, we've all known those players. We've all seen those players kind of growing up. But they get found out, and by the time you hit the professional levels, they're not going to make it. Listen, once you're involved in the game, you get to identify these and spot them really quickly. So they become forgotten men of football quite quickly, which is why I don't think many of us can recall those players.
Frank, would you shave your beard off if it meant that Chelsea would win the Premier League next season?
Well, the next season, so 2021, 2021. Yes, I'm ready for that. But I will become a hipster.
Yeah.
Until then, yeah, a big beard.
Right.
But yeah. Just if it gives them something on a boost, you know, to win the Premier League, I'm ready for that. No problem.
Did you ever consider wearing a wig, Frank, for the old hair?
No. No, I'm not Elton John, and I think it doesn't fit.
But maybe in an acting role, you'd have to wear one.
Well, I almost did in the Theory of Everything with Eddie Redmayne, where they tried the wig, but they say no. In fact, doesn't go. So I had to shave my beard, and I played without the wig. So I'm very pleased. My mother recognized
the beard,
me that
stick
way.
It on the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my god, that's nice.
Shaka.
Ooh. Yes, Dan.
Caribbean rivalry here. Which team would win if they played the 1998 Jamaican World Cup team or the 2006 Trinidad and Tobago World Cup side?
What kind of question is that? 2006 Trinidad Tobago team.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was a real game. You're over by halftime.
Where's Robbie Earl when you need him?
Yeah, man, he's hiding. That's where he is. He's hiding.
Okay. Who was better? Here we go. At controlling the pace of the game, Zidane or Xavi?
Ooh.
Frank?
Ooh.
Oh, I guess I would say Xavi. Xavi was more in the midfield zone. He was really in the center of his team. Zidane had more the last pass or the last movement, and the acceleration of the game, the pace of the game when you have to finish the action. Xavi was really, giving the pace, any pace that he wanted of the game, to prepare or to finish. So I would put Xavi. Shaq?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Zidane was a bigger threat in the attacking third. But just in terms of slowing the game down, if it was getting away from Barcelona or speeding it up when they were on top, I don't think anybody I can think of any modern game comes anywhere close to Xavi in that single regard.
Just a reminder, these are all real tweets. Watching a lot of Premiership years, does Shaka realise he conceded a lot of goals at his near post?
What was your question?
What was the question? You never understand that one.
More of an observation, Shaka, that you conceded a lot of goals at your near post.
That's a made up tweet.
Have we lost Shaka?
You made that up, Dan.
It's a made up tweet.
That's what Frank was talking about.
If Liverpool could only sign one, who should they sign? Shaka, Timo Werner, Havertz, or Koulibaly?
Ooh. I think maybe that's the easiest fit. I'm not sure that Werner or Havertz fits into the current Liverpool team that seamlessly.
Who have you got, Frank?
I would go for Havertz. In the midfield zone, he can help the club to even get better if it's possible.
You've only seen him play
once. I'm
very
fan of Koulibaly. Yeah, no, that's not true. I mean, you made up comments, you know. You don't make up the question, but you made up comments. That's unbelievable. Are you living with me 24 hours? I mean, that's unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's my answer, and I stick to it. Havertz will fit Liverpool. That's it. No explanation.
Final question. Now, of course, last week, Shaka released his power rankings of intelligence regarding the FC pundits. At the top was himself, was Gab. At the bottom, Steve Nicol and Frank LaBeouf. Stevie responded, Shaka, very much critical of your hairstyle at the moment.
Yeah, no, listen, I can't argue with that. Hold on, first of all, I did not have myself on top of my power rankings. That position belongs exclusively to Gab. And what can I say? I'm as embarrassed about my hairstyle as Stevie's alluding to. I threatened to cut it all off, but my wife said no, so sorry, you all have to live with it.
Notice, Frankie doesn't deny putting you at the bottom with Stevie.
Yeah.
That's not true, Frank.
You know,
that is not true.
Ah, thank you. He made that up again. You are the guy who make stories up. That's it. You are the one. We found you.
That's it. Thank you very much, gents. I'm off tomorrow. Sebby's here. He'll be much nicer. We'll be making up stories or tweets. Be sure to join us.
Good. He's off.